Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport for the final time from this 2018 Australian Open. I am Catherine Whittaker from Eurosport. I'm alongside David Law, who has just commentated on the men's final, Roger Federer defeating Marin Cilic in 5 sets for BBC Radio 5 Live. We are recording in front of a live studio audience of Eurosport staff, which is quite off-putting.
All two of them.
There are other members of the media present as well. But yes, the British Eurosport crew members are all in attendance, who, when I asked last night if they'd listened to all the Australian Open Tennis Podcast, they said no, because I feel I've been living it every day. Anyway, yes, David, you have been commentating the men's final, sets 2 and 4, which were in many ways the best, or certainly the most dramatic, of the final, won by Federer in the fifth set, a slightly disappointing fifth set, not a disappointing final overall, but a slightly weird final. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, it was a slightly weird final. And you're right, there were the two sets with the drama, with the feeling of jeopardy about them. And ultimately that was borne out by the fact that Cilic won them both and kept the final alive. Because really, right from the first ball, Federer was in charge and seeing it like a football, it seemed to me. I mean, this was just vintage Federer, just swishing the ball around, timing it perfectly, making Cilic uncomfortable. And I think the biggest surprise, seeing the way the match was unfolding, is that it didn't end in straight sets. He was the better player in the second set as well. And when he went, I think, 4-5, 30-40 down, it felt really surprising that Cilic had got this break point out of nowhere. He then got two more, got it into a tiebreak and won the set. And at that point, I did wonder whether we might see a real shift in momentum, because Federer had given him a schooling, really, and yet it was only one set all. Then you had the fourth set, in which, really, I mean, again, Federer was about to just put him away. He was 3-1 up. He had break points for 4-1 and a double break. And we saw a human being then. We saw a man who was doubting and losing his rhythm a little bit. Cilic was playing well. I don't want to take any credit away from him for forcing a fifth set. He started to play his best tennis, but still, Federer stopped hitting the mark on the serve, and you could see him just tighten. And it's almost quite reassuring to see somebody that good, that experienced, that great, that much
effortless, seemingly effortless.
Somebody who's won that much, to see the flesh and blood that he is.
Absolutely. And in that fifth set, even though on paper it was pretty straightforward, and in the end, in reality, it was too, he was pretty stressed, wasn't he? He was asking the umpire, Jake Garner, about how long there was until he was going to get new balls. He was getting a bit stressed about Spider-Cam. He was stressed out in that fifth set. As much as I completely agree, to us it felt like a thrilling five-setter where the result was never in doubt. To Federer, I think the result did feel in doubt.
Well, he's the one who's got to make it all happen. That's the thing. And you saw it in the victory speech. I think that there are people that watch Roger Federer play tennis and win these titles and look how many he's already won, and they see him filling up and they see the emotion come out and they see him cry, and they don't understand quite why. They don't, why is he crying when he's just won his 20th Grand Slam title and he does this all the time? It's not that big a deal. I think some people might think that, but, well, it means the world to him, for a start. He puts a heck of a lot into it. He carries this weight of hope from so many people on his shoulders. So many people want him to win, and he has to kind of embody that and deliver. And he does it so lightly most of the time that you kind of feel as though, oh, this is just a walk in the park for him. He does this all the time. It's not a big deal. But you see the reality in those speeches. We've seen it three times here. If you think back to 06 with Baghdatis crying on the shoulder of Rod Laver. Think to 2009 when Rafael Nadal has got the measure of him and has beaten him in five sets following up the 08 final. That's what makes this so staggering. This is why the emotion is coming out now, is because he's weathered that period of Nadal domination. He's weathered that period of Djokovic total domination when he went 5 years without winning one of these things at all, and there were question marks over whether he ever would. And not only has he won one, he's won three in a year.
Yeah, and I tell you what, give a pay rise to the director that cut from Roger Federer's quivering bottom lip to Rod Laver videoing the Roger Federer speech to Robert Federer, Roger's dad, crying in the box. That sequence of images made an absolute wreck of me. And I had to go on air about 30 seconds later. I was like, oh, this is great. You know, he seems delighted, but no crying. It's all going to be fine. It's all going to be fine. And then he went.
You could hear it in his voice, though.
And then Rod Laver was there filming it. And, oh, goodness me.
Yeah, it was very emotional to see that. And, yeah, it's not that surprising. It's happened throughout his career. It happened when he won his first Wimbledon. What did they call him? Roger Blubberer was one of the headlines that year. It happened this year at Wimbledon when he saw his kids in the box.
Goodness the kids weren't there, because I couldn't have.
It's not that surprising, really, that this happens to him, because that's who he is. He's, I think, a caring man and an emotional individual. It's just that it's all wrapped up in this, seemingly effortless sheen of an exterior.
I think we should give a bit of credit to Marin Cilic for making as much of a match of it as he did. The first set was a pretty chastising experience.
Well,
chastening experience.
It was Wimbledon
Mark
II at the start, wasn't it?
It was, and he must have been having horrendous flashbacks as he sat down at the end of the first set. You know, it went by in the blink of an eye. He had won, I think, 3 points in the first three games at one point. It was as bad a start as you could hope for, and I guess the only good upshot of that is that you end up in a situation with absolutely nothing. It could not have been going any worse for him. I suppose he could have got a blister on top of a blister on top of a blister. That's perhaps the only way it could have got worse for him. And I suppose there's something liberating about that. But good on him. And I loved his body language. You know, Marin Cilic, the nicest man in tennis, with that steel in his eye in the fourth set. I believed that he believed that he could win that. In the end, he wasn't as good as Roger Federer, and that's fine to lose on those terms. To lose because you're not as good a tennis player as Roger Federer is just fine. To lose because you didn't quite believe or you weren't quite strong enough mentally, that's a different story, but I don't think that was the story tonight.
No. Again, we saw what Federer has done to his game over the last couple of years. He has turned his game around again, and he's figured out this way to get big guys like Marin Cilic, even as good a mover as Cilic is, to get him off balance. And there's just nobody else who can do that.
Yeah, I mean, the first point of the match was an in-two-out Federer backhand return taken from inside the court. He stepped in, single-handed backhand on the rise, in-two-out return. I mean, it's laughable. It's laughable. And it is a shot that Federer wouldn't have played even a couple of years ago. So to all those that suggest that Roger Federer's dominance and brilliance at the moment is an indictment on the rest of the sport, perhaps it would be if it were the same Roger Federer of a few years ago, if he'd remained stagnant. This is a better player. Tennis has moved on. The fact that it's still Roger Federer doesn't mean that the sport has been stagnant, because Roger Federer hasn't been stagnant. He no. has improved.
Well, we've talked about it before, and I was mentioning it just now. The fact that he's found a way to still be at the top end of this game after what Nadal put him through those years, and after what Djokovic put him through, and also even for a little spell Andy Murray too, you know, I'm lost for words really, that he's doing this at 36, watching him move around the court like a cat. It's just ridiculous. Just one thing that was noted by one of our colleagues, Stuart Fraser, when the victory speech was happening and he was crying, he said, is this Roger Federer maybe saying he's not coming back to Melbourne? You know, is this emotion because maybe he knows in his mind that this is it?
Why on earth would that be? He said nothing to imply that that's the case.
I understand, but in trying to understand where this level of emotion has come from, when a year ago, having finally won his 18th, it wasn't comparable emotion. He didn't cry. What? I mean, you know,
he did. He had a moment.
Not like this.
He had a moment on the chair before that. He didn't in the speech, but he had a moment on the chair before the ceremony where he did. Look, and I think look, it's like we talked about yesterday.
It's a fair question,
final, there was a lot more shock and disbelief. There were a lot more other emotions in the mix, as well as joy with Roger Federer last year, I think, and the fact that it was beating Nadal, and that made it all the more unexpected. I just think there was a lot more going on, and it was a different concoction of emotions this year. I don't think he has given us any reason to. I think that is reading far too much the lines, personally.
I should say, Barbara Schett on Eurosport has asked Roger Federer, you didn't say you would come back next year in your speech. He said, I've no idea what I said. I just wanted to finish the speech somehow. I really hope to come back next year, yes.
Right.
That's what he said.
Well, there you go.
But look, I think in the moment, it is a perfectly reasonable question. This guy can't play forever.
No, but but of course, he might not come back. Factors might intervene, but he certainly intends to. He's made that very clear. He intends to play for as long as he's physically
But I'm still curious to know whether in his mind he has an idea of how the curtain will fall.
I don't know.
I don't know
either. We don't know that, Dave.
No, we don't. But we're a podcast and we can talk about it.
But I'm happy to speculate. I just think that is wild speculation.
Well, it is, but again,
given that, it's not like it's completely unheard of from Federer to be that emotional in those kind of moments.
No, it's not, but in trying to work out what the triggers are, you know, you sometimes look into it. And I didn't feel that at the time myself, I must say. I get it in that he's just hit 20, for goodness sake, when he probably thought for a while he might get one more. And this was over a 4.5-year period.
Can I hit you with a stat?
Stat me up.
Roger Federer has now won 10% of all open-era Grand Slam men's singles titles.
Wow, that's a lot. I imagine that's a similar number for Graf and Williams, isn't it? But I mean, yeah, that is an amazing number. One thing I find really weird about the final, and it's a mark of how Federer is different to any other sports person I've ever come across, is the effect that he has on crowds, such that being an underdog is an irrelevance. You know, it doesn't get you anything. You don't get any support if you're the underdog. Federer is the overwhelming favourite. Every single shot he hit was greeted like he just scored a goal in the World Cup final. Marin Cilic mounts this incredible comeback from 3-1 and break points down in the fourth set, thereby guaranteeing them more tennis and more drama, and it was greeted with polite, concerned applause. And I completely understand that, because, like I say, no athlete that I have ever seen has had the effect on people that Roger Federer has. It's I don't quite know how to put my finger on it, on how he does it.
Is it a shame, though, that it's bigger than the love of tennis? Because if you love tennis, I think, and a match is really good, you want more of it. I feel like you instinctively want it to go to a fourth set. You want it to be a contest. You might still, you know, not want it to go too close to the wire because you want your favourite to win, but I don't know.
It didn't feel quite right.
No, I agree with you.
I expect to hear certain... When as a commentator you describe a comeback, you expect the crowd to be kind of going with you on that comeback because it's dramatic and it's, like I say, it's increasing the drama. And yet there was none of that.
There was in the Eurosport office. We wanted that match to desperately to go five. You know, there were different people wanting different eventual outcomes.
Sure, but the crowd all, not.
No, and it was... I found it strange how... Because we were watching for periods just boring, you know, sausage-making things about how you watch in an MCR media control room. Sometimes we had the court effects up and sometimes we had them down. And when we turned them up, we realised how out of step we all were with the reaction of the crowds inside the Rod Laver Arena. When we sit down and watch a final, we're watching it as tennis fans, really. And so we kind of expect to be broadly in keeping with the general mood. And we were so out of step with it.
Yeah, it was like a Davis Cup match where there isn't none of the opposing team's fans city. And look, that can only be a testament to the effect that Roger Federer has on people, and I certainly don't want to take anything away from him for that. He's cultivated that over 20 years of playing incredible tennis, very decently as a human being. He is magnetic in his appeal to people, and I don't decry him that for a second, but I just think it's a little bit of a shame as a sporting event that it isn't a little more even in a way. I mean, it's just the way of the world. It's what it is. But I felt a bit sorry for Marin Cilic in that way.
Me too. We've just seen him trudge off, or certainly on screen, seen him trudge off towards his press conference. I'm sure he's being an absolute delight in there because he just always is. And, you know, a touch of, you know, the Simona Halep's last night. I hope this one maybe doesn't burn as much because he gave it everything, and because he could so easily have limped off pretty tamely after that first set
out there. The fact that they played with the roof on, I think, did hurt him a bit.
Well, I have to say, when they announced that it was going to be played with the roof on, there were serious murmurs around the place. You know, hand Federer the trophy now, because that was the extent to which a lot of people thought that would favour Roger Federer. Now look, We don't know what the scenario would have been had it not been played under the roof. So it's,
I think Federer was playing so well,
really,
he would have taken
speculate.
Some stopping.
But you don't know how he would have played if the roof were open. We do know how much he loves tennis under a roof. So
yeah.
I do find it strange. This is more highlighting of the idiosyncrasies of the heat rule. Bizarre that it was closed. Was closed tonight and not last night.
Well, it was about 4 or 5 degrees warmer.
But it was a lot more humid last night.
Certainly according to their ruling of the wet bulb globe thermometer.
Well, I understand the reasoning, but in different ways, last night was every bit as challenging.
When the news came out, though, that Simona Halep had spent 4 hours in hospital on an IV because of severe dehydration, I do wonder whether that might have just concentrated minds a little, and they might have just thought, you know what, we're not going to risk that. It's possible.
Pat Cash was saying on Eurosport earlier that if you're somebody that sweats a lot, and people do vary, if you're someone that sweats a lot, if you're playing in even pretty, I mean, less heat than today, you will lose 3 litres of water per hour. And it is literally impossible to replenish that, no matter how much it's impossible. So you will gradually, dehydrating yourself, you know. And we're sitting here at 9:15 at night, and it's 35 degrees still. I mean, it's outrageous, this weather. It is absolutely outrageous. It was more humid last night. I don't question as I've said countless times this fortnight, I don't question there being a heat policy. I don't have a particularly barbarian attitude towards it. No, it's a battle to the death. You've got to go out there and play in whatever conditions there. So I just find it bizarre that tonight the roof was closed and last night they implemented a different heat policy, but that manifested itself in a break between the two sets. It just feels like a mess.
Yeah, I do feel they need to concentrate it all together and work out what this policy is and probably, yeah, change it. Because I can't see how it was worse. I understand the humidity, but like last week when it was hotter, actually, in many ways, and yet we didn't have any application of the rule.
Was it hotter? I beg to differ.
Would you?
I mean, I had
drier,
to dip myself
heat
into the Garden Square fountain prior to broadcasting.
There is photographic
evening
evidence.
which is the first time I've done that this fortnight. So if you consider that an objective measure, today was the hottest.
Yeah. Look, we kind of have it both ways. They closed the roof and it made it more temperate. But I'll tell you, looking at Marin Cilic, the amount he was sweating out there today. I mean, I think some of that was nervous sweat as well. I mean, he was so stressed in that first set. I think the other thing is, I think he might have been complaining to his box about maybe the tension
string
of his strings.
Tension, Kyrgios-esque, yeah.
Because obviously you need it at a certain
the rackets were prepared for outdoor tension, and then the roof being closed changed things, but
because he was mishitting. I mean, like, on the backhand side, I think I read he hit five winners and over 30 unforced errors on his backhand. I mean, his brilliant backhand, that's not a good stat.
It was
stat.
His backhand letting him down tonight, which was unusual. We can see Roger Federer up there where we were recording our podcast last night, David, being swarmed by moths and other animals, which, you know, do you know what?
When I brushed
out my my back combed hair last night, when I was brushing out the layers and layers of hairspray, I think 15 insects came out in my hairbrush.
They've been camping out.
Minimum of 15, yeah.
Camping
it's,
out.
It's not
Catherine
the spot
hair
you want to be in late at night.
No. But what an amazing achievement again, and it's... It sets it up nicely for the rest of the year again. I mean, I think overall, as slightly strange as the final was, it's another 5-set win for Federer. It is 20 Grand Slam singles titles. Let's just focus on that very briefly. What a number that is. Pete Sampras has got 14. You know, the great Pete Sampras has got 14 of these things. He's got 6 more.
Yeah, and it's more daylight between him and Nadal as well, which is the more significant gap. Pat Cash says, incidentally, in terms of goal setting for Roger Federer, that his big remaining goal is to become the oldest man to be world number one. So having talked about how much less Federer cares about rankings than Nadal, and he's still number two, Federer, apparently... Pat Cash said very confidently and with authority that he understands that Federer's next big goal is to reclaim the number one spot, thus becoming the oldest man to do so.
Well, that's looking very likely somewhere after sort of the February tournaments, Dubai sort of time. There is, of course, Indian Wells and Miami, which he won both, so there are points there, and then there's a question mark over whether he plays on clay at all, isn't there? And I'm very interested to see what he ends up deciding to do, because whilst, I mean, I don't doubt Pat for a second there, if he, you know, he may know more than I do, but Federer's going to want to win Wimbledon, isn't he? And I don't think he'll want to jeopardise that. I don't think he'll be going point chasing during the clay court season and risk not winning the Wimbledon title if he feels that that's one he can still win. And I mean, who could bet against him right now? Who realistically has got a better chance of winning Wimbledon than him? Nobody.
Is that a hypothetical question?
What do you think?
Nobody right now.
No.
They don't. No, I mean, a lot can change
well, that's
in that
true
period of time, but right now, nobody. Right now he is the hands down clear favourite for Wimbledon without question. But you know, 6 months ago, Andy Murray was world number one. So,
yeah,
a heck of a lot can change.
Hard to believe all this stuff's happened.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. A couple of doubles finals that we haven't brought to you the results of just yet. The doubles title won by Pavic and Marach over Cabal and Farah. The fans were going crazy for those two, but they couldn't get the job done. And then Pavic managed to win the mixed doubles as well with Dubrovsky of Canada. So he had a good old tournament here. So Croatia have won a couple of slams there.
Croatia have, and it was an interesting mixed doubles final because it was Tomeja Babos and Rohan Bopana were Pavic and Dubrovsky's opponents, and Babos had won the women's doubles title with Kristina Mladenovic, so it was guaranteed whichever way it went that someone was going to become a double doubles champion, and in the end it was Matej Pavic.
Yeah. So what's been your highlight of the 2 weeks? It's coming to an end.
As somebody working for a British broadcaster, it's hard not to pick Kyle Edmund. I think the how much of a surprise that was a real treat for us. Match of the fortnight, Kerber Halep.
Yeah. Well, I think both of the matches with Halep. And what a tournament Halep ended up having. 15-13 saving match points.
If I was to pick a player that provided me the most entertainment this tournament, Halep would edge Kyle Edmund, even. I mean, Simona Halep, you have provided me with an awful lot of drama, entertainment, and joy this tournament. Thank you very much.
Yeah, no, it's been great. It's been really good. And I mean, what are we now? We're sort of an hour and a half after the final concluded, and Roger Federer is still being shown on the screens here in the media centre.
He hasn't showered yet, David.
He still has the trophy in his hands. He's been to 155 interviews with live broadcasters. He's been out to the Margaret Court Arena and addressed the crowds that were there, and he's still smiling. He's still got this trail of people following him around, telling him where he needs to go next. And he still hasn't even been into the press conference yet. And that's followed by how many interviews in three different languages. I mean, he's actually going to spend longer doing interviews than he is in a five-set tennis match.
I think you're probably right. Yeah, and he probably won't complain about it the way Sloane Stephens did at the start of the tournament.
No, slightly different.
Get on you, Roger.
Personalities. So, I think that's sort of sums it all
up.
That's
a wrap.
Where
David
are you off next to?
I am. Well, I'm off to Sydney tomorrow for a bit of interim R&R, and then I'm off to sunny Pyeongchang where it's currently minus 35 degrees.
Minus 35. So it's 38 degrees here today.
Roger Federer will be in the main interview room at 12:40.
There we go.
So how long have we got to wait?
He's got 15 minutes to shower. Although from the looks of things on the screen, no showering is happening. He's just meet and greeting people. Yeah, so Pyeongchang and the Winter Olympics.
The Winter Olympics. Well,
so if you're a fan of both tennis and luge, I am the broadcaster for you.
Make sure you turn your Eurosport on if you want your fix of Catherine Whittaker on your screens. We will be bringing you a tennis podcast next week, even though Catherine's not going to be around, because we've already had a great idea, and it's going to be a listener questions only, brought to you by our guest editors. We've got one the next 2 weeks, one brought to you by Jim Boyle, our guest editor, another one brought to you by Grace Onions, our other guest editor, and Catherine, just wanted to say very good luck at the Winter Olympics. Exceptionally proud of you for going there and doing what you do, and it's going to be fascinating and fun to watch you on the screen. And this has been a lot of fun this last 2 weeks.
It's been a great lot of fun, hasn't it? Not as fun as I hope talking about people careering down a mountain on a tea tray is going to be.
As Mary Carrillo has called it, what is it? A bar bet's gone bad is what she described the luge as. And listen, thank you all for listening. And we're going to be back really soon. Who have we got to thank? Who sponsors us, Catherine?
We've got to thank Triple S.
Of course we have.
We've got to thank Melanie Bowes. We've got to thank Charlie the Ferret. We've got to thank tennisballs.com, and we've got to thank La Manga Club. Well, I personally have got to thank La Manga Club and Rafa.
Still haven't had our rematch, have we?
No. Lack of tennis rackets has proven, surprisingly enough, a bit of an impediment to that here, and tropical temperatures. I think, that's it for the. I mean, we thank everyone that listens and everyone that chipped into the Kickstarter, but those are the headliners. And we thank you all very much, and we'll speak to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.